Hey, what up, y'all? It's your girl, Vivica Fox here, and welcome to my podcast, Hustling with Vivica A. Fox. Oh, we're going to have some fun for y'all today, so get ready, because my guest today has been in some of the most iconic movies of our time, including Scream and Malibu's Most Wanted. He's a stand-up comedian, actor, television producer, screenwriter, unforgettably funny, and clearly was born to entertain. Please welcome to Hustling with Vivica A. Fox, White Chocolate, Jamie Kennedy in the house.
Hey, Vivica. Hey, oh, Jamie. My God. What an intro. I didn't know I had that nickname.
Yeah, well, no, to me, you're white chocolate, because you know, we got to take let people know that you and I, you know, you've been in Scream and Malibu Most Wanted, mm-hmm. but you and I did a film together, 2007, kicking mm-hmm. it old school with Miguel Nunez. I was his baby mama, and mm-hmm. you was his homie, so me and you, we go back like Kool-Aid.
Hell yeah. But you know also, I remember that, you know, we did something else together.
What?
I forgot too. You forgot. Do you remember The Starlet?
Oh, Jamie, no way. Did you do The Starlet with me?
I produced that and you were one of the stars. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, my God. We both survived Faye Dunaway.
You and
no
Faye.
No way. Yeah, Jamie, how could I forget that?
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
It was such a good idea and it could have worked.
Really
And then it was you and Faye and Joseph and
and I'll tell people, let me just inform my audience what The Starlet was. Mm-hmm. It was like a reality show contest for upcoming actresses, and it was called The Starlet. And so didn't we have about 12 to 15 upcoming mm-hmm. actresses, and they would go to these like camps, and then they would come and they would have to perform these scenes in front of myself, Faye Dunaway, and who was the gentleman's name?
Joseph Middleton.
Yes.
Big casting director, but it was you and him and Faye. It was basically American Idol for actresses.
Yes, and, basically. Oh my God.
I know. I was just thinking about that because it was so quick. And I was like, we've never been able to do this too. And Faye and oh boy.
Yeah. We love Faye Dunaway. Let me tell you something. God bless her. We go, we know what being an actress is all about when you deal with Faye Dunaway. But you know what? Mama, you got to say, though, she would bring it when she would let you know about the moments. Because I had never, ever worked with someone that questioned the lighting guy. Was that a baby on that? What lighting thing are you using? I was like, oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
But Faye Dunaway, she made me appreciate knowing your light and your angles. Right?
Yeah, she knows everything she needs to know about that, so.
All right, well, listen, first of all, we're going to not talk about Faye because, you know, she's a classic and we got respect.
A legend, I love her.
A legend, she's a legend, a thespian. So listen, I appreciate you getting up. We're recording this podcast a little early, and I heard that you are a night owl, and we are recording this early in the morning, so I appreciate you waking up. Jamie Kennedy, we are here to celebrate your career. Are you ready, Jamie Kennedy?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
How you been surviving in these corona crazy times?
You know, it's weird because people ask me like, you know, have you been doing comedy or what? Have you been reading scripts and stuff? I'm like, no, I've been cleaning. I've been moving furniture. I've been Swiffering. I've been baking lemon bars. I've been throwing out stuff from my garage. Like, I'm literally like, Jeff, you know, Laura Ingalls from the Little House. Like, we're all frontier people. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have anybody coming over here really to help me just once in a while.
Right.
And I'm like, just making sure I got my fort intact.
Word.
But I was paranoid for a little while. Not terrible, but just like, who knows what it is?
Right.
What is this? Ooh, this dude breathes across the street. Is it going to float over here? Right.
So were you like super quarantining yourself? Like looking at people like, don't come near me. I better have my 6-foot distance.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I went out. I have me and my assistant and we hunkered down. And I had I had the N95. I had the rubber gloves. I have the hat. And like, I wasn't doing nothing. Like, if you walked in that air within 6 feet and you were covered up, I didn't walk in that air. Like, I was avoiding air. Yeah. And then like, I read something on MIT report. It said 27 feet. And then I started getting hotter and I started feeling better because I'm like, ooh, the heat's going to burn everything up. And so anytime I got the mail, I would let it sit for 4 days and 3 days and 2 days. Then I just started putting everything in the microwave. And then I know, like, I'm microwaving everything, clothes, mail, food. And then I was paying some dude to go shopping for me. And I'm like, yo, go there, get this, go there. And then I had to go out for something. I had to go out because I had to go to CVS and I couldn't get anybody. Mm. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to do it. And I was a little bit tripping. And then I was good. And then I started just doing stuff. I had to go to FedEx and I did that. Like, you went to the DMV. And I know it sounds so stupid. I'm not like that. But since we didn't know what this whole thing was, I started getting braver and braver. And I started doing Zooms.
Yeah.
I started talking to everybody. And then I started going out. And then like the lockdowns went. And so then I played tennis. So now I'm like really much better. I wasn't a freak, but I just didn't know what it was. And now I do everything social distancing, but I still wear my mask and that stuff. I don't wear my rubber gloves playing golf and stuff.
Okay. Oh, so you're playing golf.
I play golf once a week now, but like make sure it's all distance. Yeah. So
in
the beginning, we didn't know what the hell this is like. You know.
Can I ask, are you a germaphobe?
No, I'm not even like that. I was just tripping because
they just don't know.
Everyone does. Yeah, it was like the monster under the bed, right? No one knows what it was. Some people were like, it's a cough. And other people were like, the vent. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. like my friend was talking about, like, he was at a coffee shop and he was like talking to some girl and he's like, she's cute. And I'm like, yeah, but is she ventilator cute? I mean, that was the joke, right? I mean,
what?
You get the joke, Vivica.
Ventilator cute. Oh, yeah, my Lord. You're like, are you ready to risk it all?
Yeah. Yeah. Yo, people are out there trying to get that they're trying to do that COVID hookup. I'm like, what?
Okay. No. But no, I've been good. No. I'm not exchanging any bodily fluids with anyone. I'm not a germaphobe, but
I'm not a germaphobe either. But I'm chill now. But I still I take my precautions. But in the beginning, mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but it was weird. It was weird.
I mean, my life went to a grinding halt. I was literally like headed to finish up Empire, going to my friend's son's state basketball championship. And it was like, I was selling my house, about to move into a new house. And it was like, it just things went to a grinding halt. And at first I was like, oh, okay, this will last for like a couple of weeks. And then it stretched on and it was like, wow, this is really serious. You know what I mean? And, you know, you just have to respect people's wishes. That was the one message that I think what America needs to do is that we got to take this thing seriously. Like, we're seeing so many people out acting assholes about putting on a damn mask. And mm-hmm. it's like, you guys, if wearing a damn mask is going to be able to help you to go live a little bit, you know, go to the, because we got to make a living. If wearing a mask is going to, you know, help prevent this thing a little bit, or hunkering down a little bit for a couple of months so that we can go back to somewhat normalcy, I don't see a problem with that. Do you?
Yeah. No. It's whatever you believe is what you believe. Like, any business can refuse anyone's service.
Word.
So if you don't have shoes or socks or shirt, you ain't getting the 7-Eleven. So the same thing should be for the mask.
All right.
And it's like, I want to wear the mask because because I don't want to breathe your stuff in, you know?
Word.
And so people are just, it is weird about it. Whether it works or not, whether the efficiency works or not, I do feel like, oh, I got a little extra, a little protection.
Word.
You know? And it's so simple. Yeah. And it's totally simple to do. And if you're out and about and you're outside 6 feet, 8 feet, whatever, you're fine. That's what they say. So I agree with you. It's totally about the mask. And
it's just like respect for each other.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I will say, I mean, like I've been around when I've been around people now and I haven't seen any coughers. Or, it's weird. I haven't really heard any coughers or sneezers. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, though, they say that asymptomatic and all that is like, what is that? But I will say this, though. I caught a picture of you on 4th of July and, you know, you were with a couple of your homegirls. I'm just saying. I hope.
Oh, yes. No, listen. I got a brand new house. And yeah. I just feel like this. All of those that for 2 months quarantined and was being good, you mm-hmm. can come. You can come through. At yeah, this yeah. point, you know what I'm saying? You can come through because it's you can do small groups. You see, yeah. small groups. I don't have my usual parties because, see, my birthday's coming up. And I usually have a whole bunch of parties, but usually about me and about 45 of my friends go down to Jamaica. But we're not doing that this year. So, you know, but now,
I've graduated to a couple groups now, everybody who's been quarantined. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just making decisions. But I will say this, though. Don't you feel bad if you, like, kind of sneeze or you cough? You're like, hey, I'm good. Or you break out the hand sanitizer really quick. Like, I'm good, y'all. I'm sanitized. You know what I'm saying?
I did that last night with myself. I felt a cough coming on. I was like, don't do it. Don't do it. No, you don't.
All right, now since you were like white chocolate to me, how you feel about BLM, you know, Black Lives Matters? How you feel about that?
Oh, well, that's, you know, that's a whole other, you know, whole other thing. And it is, you know, a most important issue that we got to deal with right now. I mean, in the middle of all this, and then we have, you know, the terrible racial injustices that we saw, and we saw, you know, the stuff with George Floyd, it was horrific. So here's the thing. It's like, I always say this, I was telling people is that to understand Black Lives Matter and how Black people feel, you have to ask you. You have to ask people of color. You know what I mean? You have to ask Black people, because white people, I feel, sometimes tend to speak on without checking in with the community. So my biggest thing was, when all this stuff was going down, and it's not like it hasn't been going down for the last 400 years, but like it got highlighted with George, it got highlighted with Breonna, it got highlighted with Ahmaud Arbery, and all this shit was just terrible. And I think, you know, the first thing you have to understand is why Black Lives Matters is the way it is because Black people, and you correct me if I'm wrong, feel that their lives aren't as equal as every other life. So that's why the term Black Lives Matter has to be said by itself. Because until Black Lives Matter, no lives matter, because they want to feel even. And when people are saying all this other stuff about all lives and all this stuff, it's bullshit. Because you gotta get, everybody has to be together. And
Can I tell you the thing that tripped me out? I saw something on Instagram the other day where it was a white guy and he goes, oh my God, because you know they went and painted Black Lives Matter in front of Trump Tower in New York. And you've had a couple of people that supposedly from Blue Lives Matter come and try to vandalize the Black Lives Matter. So they said, the guy was like, isn't this a trip? They've got a policeman guarding the Black Lives Matter so the Blue Lives Matter won't vandalize it. And it was kind of like, you know, life is trippy. If in New York, the mayor, who I believe made sure that they did the Black Lives Matter thing in front of Trump Tower, the painting, if he orders the police, to me, once again, it's just respect. I don't understand what is the problem with letting someone, if they're doing it peacefully, like the protesters and everything, to let them have their moment and it doesn't end in violence.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand?
You were saying who was protest? You were saying that anyone.
It was a guy, and he was tripping him out that a policeman was protecting the Black Lives Matter painting in front of Trump Towers. He goes, "This is just mind blowing." But it's the world that we're in right now that things are at this crazy point that I don't think I ever expected all of this to happen. Because a Black man was literally filmed being murdered in front of us by a policeman. We've known that these kind of things, like you said, have happened for the last 400 years. But is it because everyone saw it this time that it just made the Black Lives Matter important to everyone? Because to me, it's like that camera don't lie. We all saw what happened for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. A man was basically murdered.
Yeah, he was murdered. He was horrifically murdered. I mean, you tell me, I've been in LA for over 30 years and, you know, I grew up in Philly. I know you're from the Lou, right? You're from the Lou?
No, I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana, right next to the Lou. But I'm Midwest.
Yeah. So it's you know, and listen, there's always been racial struggles I've seen my whole life, you know, and but I would say Philly is more Black than white if you go to the city, you know what I mean? So that's why I always grew up with the influences of Black culture. And so, you know, you would see on TV the Watts riots and stuff when you were a kid and stuff. And then we had the riots out here in 92 with Rodney King. And then this is almost the exact amount of distance from the Watts to the Rodney to the Rodney now to this. And I think, you know, I have talked to other, you know, Black people, and you tell me, but they feel that this is the most activism they've seen from all the races get behind Black Lives Matter. Do you feel that?
Absolutely.
And I do feel like you're saying it's because it's kind of like repetition. You know, it's like, you know, when you see like an ad for a movie, you just keep seeing it, even if you're not interested in that movie, you just see that billboard. You're like, I got to go see this. What is this? And I feel like with cell phones, unfortunately, we keep seeing more terrible acts on cell phones, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, Instagram. There's just people keep posting these bad injustices with police and with other people, just, you know, doing things to Black people. And now it's just, I think we hit critical mass. We're like, yo, this has got to stop.
You know what? And that's how I feel too, Jamie. It's got to stop. And when all of this went down, I literally posted everyone had like the blackout thing, and I just put enough across the line. You know what I mean? It's just like enough. And okay, so go ahead.
Let me ask you one question about that though. Since you and I are probably from the same generation, I do feel that racism is not being tolerated by the under 25 set. Meaning,
Agreed.
I feel like racism's an old white man's got to die out. Like I feel like the younger kids, the influencers, if you look at like Tyler the Creator and different kids like that, and then if you look at non-famous kids, I feel like they all hang out together.
Yeah.
They don't care what your gender is, what your race is. So I do feel that it's progressing and they're not standing for it. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree with you 100%. I said, I feel like our world is in major transition and it's needed because these kids, they're fluid. They don't care, like you said, about color, who you love or this and that. They judge each other by like, if I like you or not, do I like being around you? You know, literally. So speaking of people that got on everybody's damn nerves, that it went from like the old white man to now we got the Karens. What is going on with the damn Karens? Let's talk about the Karens, Jamie.
Well, you know, I have a bit on my Instagram, and I've been dealing with Karens for a long time in the stand-up world. Yeah, I call them white wine warriors. Okay, I call them the triple dub nation. I mean,
that's hilarious.
You get the dub nation, the dubs. If you get a white woman in a comedy show in her mid 40s after she had a couple of glasses of Franzia, you know, she wants to speak to everybody's manager. They'll say something in the middle of your joke and be like, I was helping the show. You know, they're just, you know, it's the most entitled people around. And I mean, honestly, there's so much of this going on. And that I think some of these Karens are having some menopause issues for real.
Being a woman that
you told me.
Well, no, you know what it is?
And some of them are just loony.
That part. Okay. I think that what the mask, Corona, is bringing out a lot of people, just awful, bad behavior, and also mental illness. It's like, they don't want to be told what to do. And how dare you try to tell me what to do? The entitlement, instead of being equal, it's like, how dare you not take away my entitlement?
Yeah. Some of them are indignant and racist. Some of them seem a little cray cray. Some of them seem like they have menopause, and some of them seem like they some of them seem like they never had that good. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Which you if you in menopause and you ain't getting the good, you will become a little angry. Let's just keep that trip. Okay, need somebody just come over there and knock them coochie cobwebs off.
But it's like,
I can balance it out for you, because I'm an older woman and I know it. And menopause does, you do get it's called menopause for a reason. Men all pause right now.
Look.
So you need somebody to come over there and straighten back out your mentality and knock off the coochie cobweb.
I never seen you go Karen. I've seen you on the set though. You need that fan. And you got that fan.
That's about it.
A little hot.
That's about it. But see, I'm getting toward the end, so I'm glad. I'm getting horny again and everything. So we need for Corona to end, all right? So I can get it in.
You need to put the shield up though, and have that fan to blow that germ.
I cannot imagine that. Jamie, making out with somebody with that face shield on. Are you kidding me?
No, making out. No, you got to go to step three. You know what I'm saying? Forget all the foreplay. You just got to
get it right on in. Get it right on in. All right.
Man.
Okay, we done went from Black Lives Matter to Karen to menopause.
This has got a lot of highlights in it.
All right. So let's talk about you now. Now, people have known you for different characters. But you say that something is in transition for comedy. Something's happening to comedy these days. What did you mean by that?
Well, before all this was happening, I mean, like what we were saying earlier about how the younger generation doesn't care about anything, just if you're a good person. That is what's beautiful about, you know, ending a lot of these atrocities, you know, racism and old stupid things that we have. But with that comes some political correctness, which everybody's got their, you know, panties in a wad.
Yes.
So comedy is like, I quit it with this, Vivica. It's like, you know, you're naturally hilarious and talented and charming, you know, and the people you roll with are like that. You know, we go on the set of Funny You Should Ask, and there ain't a damn, that's not a funny person. We all have a good time and we laugh.
True that.
And before, you would know who you're hanging with. But now, because of the world of social media, I have this theory that everybody has a voice, which is good. And they can consume any type of content, which is good. But within that, they're going to consume things that they never would have consumed before and be offended by it. So it's like, whether it's a tweet, an Instagram, a Facebook, whatever it is, you're going to say some shit and you're minding your own business and 10 people are going to take offense to it.
Agreed. Now,
and so it's like you end up fighting these battles that you didn't even know there was the war you're in. People have no idea what playfulness and jokes are anymore.
Agreed. So saying it's just a joke is going to, you feel like it's going to become extinct in a few years.
I really do. I really do. The goalposts are changing, man. They're moving. It's just like, no one has any irony anymore. People are taking everything literally.
But I agreed. But do you believe that's because of the camera? Everyone's recording everything. Do you know what I mean? Because you got to realize, you said, we're from, you know, the 90s, the good old days when we all didn't record everything. Like, everybody might have been like, oh, you heard about such and such. And we just kept it amongst us. But now it's like everybody wants to pull out their damn camera and record everything and go, oh, my God, I was so offended. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, it's 100%. We live in this CCP state, in the sense of like, we are completely documented of everything that we do. And it's like, you know, like we have to be aware of everything we say because you could say the wrong thing and people can take it out of context and they try to point the finger at you. I mean, two things I'll say to that. It's like Charlie Murphy, God rest his soul. He had this great quote and he said, we live in the era of the snitch.
Ooh.
and it's so Ooh. Good, right? Because it's like people want to just like point out someone else's misgivings mm-hmm. so they look better.
I agreed.
And it's like, I've been to multiple parties with you and I'm not going to go into details, but I believe you and I are from the same era and the same way yes. we believe it. It's like, yo, what happens at the Chateau Marmont stays at the Chateau Marmont. And it's like, I've been to parties like MTV after parties and Diddy would have these great parties at Ron Burgle's. Yeah. Ooh. You don't see any cameras. You don't see any videos. You don't hear any rumors from them, but they were fun, right?
Totally so it's like, fun.
And it's like, but we don't go in there because we're enjoying it in the moment. But if somebody comes outside, hit the camera, and oh, Jamie Kennedy was by the punch bowl and he felt, you know, whatever. We don't do that. So right. it's a weird time and we have to get better, but there's a difference between getting better and literally stifling free speech and fun. And so.
Do you know what I call that, Jamie?
Huh?
Team too much.
Oh, yeah.
I'm serious. Term. Yeah, team too much where it's like they all, like you said, the culture of the snitch. For me, that would be team too much. They don't know how to just go and have a good time. Like, do you remember going to a concert and not seeing a damn phone come out when the performer hits the stage? Can I tell you that's the thing that irritates me the most, to go to a concert and everyone pulls out their phone and starts recording the performance? Oh, I think that's so rude to the performer.
Yeah, yeah, you can't. That's true. I mean, yeah, well, that's just a given now. I mean, when we do comedy, they say there's no clubs in the phones in the club, but people still, you know, sneak them in. And I agree with you. It's A, it's not enjoying the moment, but B, they'll take something and they can just take one little moment out of context and they'll try to fry you. I mean, it's weird. We live in a takedown culture. You know what I mean? Instead of like letting me do me or you do you, I'm going to show you why you shouldn't do you.
Word.
And it really is like, we have to get better and things are getting better. But I don't know. It feels like, you tell me, it feels like people just are like fun suckers now.
I don't get it. I don't get it. I mean, now I know that why sometimes when you go to events or someone has something that's like, you know, say they're established, that they make people check their phones, or like when people get married, like I went to a wedding and it was Mike Epps' wedding. And mm-hmm. when you got there, they had to give up the phone because they didn't want their wedding documented by you. So then you could take a moment and then maybe sell it or do something like that. So that's what I'm talking about. It's like, I didn't mind when they said, hey, we're sorry, you got to put your phone in this thing. I handed it to them because I was there to enjoy their wedding.
Yeah. They don't want their personal moment of love out there on the internet without their approval. And I totally agree.
Yeah.
It's crazy, but yeah, the phones have a lot to do with it.
Agreed. So all of you culture snitches, bow down if y'all come to an event for Vivica Fox or Jamie Kennedy, all right? So now, let's talk about your acting career. What's your most memorable role that you've ever played?
I mean, that's hard, right?
Okay, top two, top three.
I would say Scream was mm-hmm. so good because it just became this little thing in the... Became this little, yeah, it just became this like little baby, little thing that could. Now it's just gone beyond like a horror movie. And it's just become this piece of pop culture lexicon.
Absolutely. How did that come about for you?
I started getting some TV guest spots and stuff and I got an agent and then I started auditioning and Scream was like this little horror movie, you know? And you know, as a young actor, that's how you get certain roles. That's like, horror movies are like the ones mm-hmm. they take chances on. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, and Courtney Cox signed on and that was like the big, she was like, okay, they felt they had a star and they could discover people. And I was like the only really person that didn't have any credits. And I just my agent got me in. I just auditioned and auditioned and auditioned. I just kept auditioning. And then, you know, I like Wes Craven to this day. I owe him my career because he took a chance on me without being known.
So then from Scream, you then created a character for...
I called it
a
B-Rad.
Tell what did you say that again?
B-Rad. I created B-Rad. Was that what you have on your notes there?
No. Because what I'm screaming, is that from Malibu's Most Wanted?
Yeah, that's from Malibu.
Okay. So you went from Scream. It blows up. Everybody's into Scream. And then from there, you created Malibu's Most Wanted. You created that?
Well, I wrote a movie with my friend Nick. Okay. And it was based on a character that I did on stage. And then I was doing some movies, you know, I did Enemy of the State and Three Kings. And these are all amazing movies, you know, on Boiler Room. And then I got my own show. Dwayne Martin was in Scream 2. And then you did All of Us, I think after that or around that time, like 98, was it or something?
Yes, I did.
And then I was starting to get into TV stuff. And I was doing the Jamie Kennedy Experiment. And that's when I started doing all my different characters. And then they liked the character B-Rad. And that's when I created Malibu. So Malibu, I would say Scream, Malibu. And I mean, there's movies I've been in, like Enemy of the State's an amazing movie. Mm-hmm. Three Kings, an amazing movie. But in terms of acting, I would say my third one is probably Criminal Minds. Okay. I did this little character and people liked it.
Oh, that's right. So you said... Malibu's Most Wanted, you say the film is a love letter to hip hop. And the joke is white people only take the good things out of black culture.
Yeah. So I came from Philly.
Okay.
And like,
you're from Philly?
Yeah.
I never knew that. That's where you get that white chocolate from. Yeah, boy.
Get a little swag.
You know what I'm saying?
But I grew up in Philly and I grew up right on the edge of the city. So my family grew up in the city. And then by the time they had me, I was like this little extra, not supposed to happen, baby.
Oh.
And they started
making. Maybe that's why you got something against menopause. Were you a menopause baby?
My mom had me in her mid 40s. Okay.
Oh, there you have it.
My mom literally had me where it's like, you know, the cutoff, the danger zone point. Right. But she had a bunch of kids before me. And so she, you know, with my dad. And so, you know, she was
easy.
How many
kids in your family? Six. Oh, wow. Okay.
So,
Philly.
Yeah.
Philly strong.
East Coast Wanes.
Okay.
So she has these kids. And by that time they started making money. So everybody had gone through the hard stuff. And so then they moved to the suburbs with me. And I'm like the little baby, and I'm raised by TV. You know, it's the first time we had a big TV, a couple big TVs, and I'm watching. You know, I was raised by TV: Gilligan's Island, Jeffersons, you know, Three's Company, Good Times. I was thinking about the shows I used to watch all the time. I used to watch the Jeffersons, All in the Family, Sanford and Son. The Flip Wilson show.
Yep.
Carol Burnett.
Shows, yeah.
Yeah. But I was like raised by, you know, a lot of black culture. Right. Okay. So we would go into Philly and my mom would work there and she would take the subway. So we'd have to go with her a lot. So I got an idea of a different existence by taking the subway. I've been taking the subway since I was a little kid. And I feel that I always would see, you know, all types of things in the city, you know, of all different people. We had Koreans, black, white. Everybody has their little pockets in Philly, but when you go to the city, everybody has to co-mingle. And I started getting introduced to hip hop just by hanging out on the playground and literally dudes having boom boxes and not hearing that. I'm like, oh, what's that? And playing basketball and, you know, and I always had so much more fun when like I heard rap music. The first time I heard a rap song, I was like, this just makes you feel cool. And so, but anything that was happening, what I'm saying is I grew up in Philly and everybody was into hip hop, no matter what race you were. Okay. And then I moved to LA and I see kids out here acting like, you know, hard, like literally the joke was, yo man, yo, what's up with you, man? hey, I don't want to see you in front of Baby Gap no more. You know what I mean? Like, white kids advise that, yo, man, what? Yo, why I catch you in front of this Aunt Julia, son? Like, I was like, what the hell? And it was, you know, they literally what you call fronting. Okay. They were fronting, right?
But, okay.
And so I was like, this is not, because in Philly, dudes would be listening to hardcore like EPMD or Big Daddy Kane. They'd be like, hey, what's up, Herb? You know, they weren't, they were still acting the way. They
right.
were, but dudes out in the West Coast were acting like they were from like the hood or some shit. Like,
word.
From Brooklyn.
From South, was, or South Central. So they thought.
Yeah, I was word. Like, and the dude never left, you know, he never left Westwood.
Yeah, yes. Brentwood. Yeah.
So it was a new phenomenon, I noticed. And so, and that's what Malibu is about. Malibu is about two things, about a guy who loves rap and he really believes he is a rapper and he does love the hip hop genre and he loves it. And but it's everything he's learned about is from like BET and TV. And basically in a nutshell, it's like, it's what the world is. Like people love black culture. There's a great saying, you know, they love your rhythm. Somebody said they love our rhythm. They hate our blues. Ooh. And so I think to really appreciate black culture, you have to see all the atrocities that's going on. But in a deeper level, Malibu's is about how white people kind of enjoy the goodness of black culture, but you know, run away when the fire starts. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm saying.
It's
like,
it's tough. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I grew up right on the edge of the city so I can enjoy it, but I could always go back to the suburbs.
Word.
So that's a blessing, but it's also like, you know, not fair to people that were in the thick of it, you know?
Yeah. Now in 2000, you had a memorable experience making Boiler Room with Ben Affleck, Nia Long and Vin Diesel. Matter of fact, you said that you and your crew was running them New York streets for like 6 weeks. 6 weeks, Jamie. Really?
Yeah. I want to say, you know the Downtown Grand in New York, you know that hotel?
I'm very bougie when I stay in New York. I stay up.
Oh, it's a good one. Where okay. we at the where you stay?
I usually stay at the Mandarin Oriental or the Four Seasons. I'm sorry, I'm up on the isn't that the West Side?
That's the West Side. You never stay down at the Mercer anywhere
no.
down there?
No.
All right, well.
That's not right. Tell me about it. But I do go down there to shop and to visit, but I prefer to stay, you know, up on the okay. West Side by Central Park.
Nails done, hair done, everything good. Okay.
But anyway, go ahead. Tell me where y'all was at. What was y'all doing?
It was just this young kid, Ben Younger, amazing director, writer, and he wrote this movie, Boiler Room, and guess what it was? Boiler Room was his experiences when he worked for Jordan Belfort. Mm. So he actually worked for the Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh.
He then made this movie as a fictional account of what happened. And then the Wolf of Wall Street movie was a book, and then that became a movie. But this movie was inspired by that. Isn't that crazy?
Mm.
And so he was this young kid. He's amazing director, writer. And we just, you know, he was myself, Vin Diesel, Scott Kahn, Nia, Giovanni Ribisi, like everybody was in this movie. And
well, say his name for me one more time, because they were giving me that in briefing. I said, now that name just don't roll up. Giovanni
Ribisi, you know him?
Yeah, I know him as an actor, but his name is, it always gets me. But he's a good actor. I like him.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah.
Him, Nia, Ben Affleck, Vin. And it was just Tom Everett Scott. It was just like a movie. All we were doing all day was selling stocks. And, you know, our characters are like drinking and, you know, doing coke and doing ooh. Stuff like that. I mean, that was the characters. Mm-hmm, now, mm-hmm. You know, I don't ski, if you know what I'm saying. I don't do
word.
That, but I do like a little cocktail now and then.
Word.
So we would literally shoot downtown and have New York. And at night we would just go out to the clubs and kind of like act like our characters. I mean, it was, and we
that
all
was
had,
dope.
This brand new hotel.
Yeah.
It was in the late 90s.
Yeah,
no
I was
cell
running
phones.
Things. Yeah. No snitches.
No snitches. No Rona. Yeah. And we were late night. Remember Spy Bar in New York?
Yes,
New
York? I do.
Yes, you do. Yeah, we were out there till 5 a.m. and 6 a.m. call. You know how it is.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
So that was probably one of the top three funnest experiences because it was just room service every day, great budget. Young producer, New Line didn't know what we were with this little movie, and we all had dope per diem. It was just great.
It's great. I see, and that's when you love. Like for me, one of my most memorable movie experiences was when we made Set It Off, because it was like me, Latifah, Jada, Kimberly. Kimberly was new; she didn't really hang out, but me and Latifah, we would go. You know, we filmed at night, so if it was like. We got to wait for the sun to go down a little bit more. We would go find something to do. And that's all I'm going to say.
where
in downtown LA. It was downtown LA. Yeah. So we had fun. So I know what you're talking about. So now let's move a little bit forward because I don't want to run out of time before we talk about more of your career. Now let's bring it up to date because the other day, I was somewhere chilling, or I was getting my makeup done for a Zoom thing, and I hit the Usher video. Don't waste my time. Here comes Jamie Kennedy, y'all. Oh my God, Jamie. I love this. Now, how did this come about? How?
First of all, Usher don't age, does he?
Usher looks amazing. He looks so, and can dance. The dance moves. I wanted you to see if you could, you know, do some moves since you crashed Usher's party. I would have loved to see you try to do some choreography, but you didn't. You stuck to comedy.
Yeah. My friend's a producer, and what's funny is one of my old assistants, you know, some of them, you know how they go. Some of them end up on the crack pipe, and some of them become successful. And he's my little assistant from the early 2000s. Now he's one of the biggest video music producers. And he came down and he was like, yo, I'm doing this Usher video. I got Snoop in it. I got Jermaine Dupri. I got everybody. And there's a funny cameo. You want to do it? And I'm like, in.
And sign me up.
Yeah, it was just boom. I went down there.
Let's describe your scene. So the party's like jumping, y'all. So Usher's having like, you know, a jamming house party. And up comes Jamie Kennedy trying to like, yo, hey, what's happening? I'm here to party. Tell him the rest.
I come in and they're like, yo, you're not on the list. And I'm like, no, man. Me and Usher, we're cool. You know, Teen Choice 03, you know, MTV Movie Awards 04. I'm right over here. Rihanna lives there. I'm on the back house over here. You know, I'm like talking where I live. And then I convinced the door guy to let me in. And then he lets me in. And Usher's like, no, come on, man.
No, we got it. No. Because we got to fill him in. Because homeboy breaks down your wardrobe, first of all. He's like, first of all, you're not even dressed right. And you're like, yo, it's Miami Vice casual. Oh, my God. Usher, where the hell did he get Miami Vice casual?
Where did that was- Usher improvised that, I think. Or did I say that?
You said that. You said it's Miami Vice casual. So then here comes, oh, my baby. I love him so much. Evan Ross. I'm walking up looking like Michael Jackson. I love however, and I heard this because I'm a filmmaker. You heard Evan Ross's heels clicking like he had on some boots or something. Evan Ross comes walking up like a rock star, like you turn around, yo, Evan, what's going on? Then you see he has on the dope chain. You're like, yo, that chain. I got mine at home. Jamie, I noticed every single nuance. I swear to God, I did. And I was like, did he improv that? Did you?
I improvised the whole video.
Oh, my God. So then, y'all, wait a minute. So Evan then turns and starts sounding like Michael Jackson. I see you in there, brother. Yeah. And then, so he's like, see, that's the clout card. I can get in now, right? And the security guy is like, nope. Now here comes Usher. Now, where the hell did you come up with this? Usher, Ush, what?
Wow, you really broke down this video.
I did, because Jamie, it was so good to me. I was rolling because first of all, I love Usher. I think he's amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to see him making music again. But I love you. And then Evan, I love Evan. I mean, it's just like all my favorite people. And it was so good. And so Usher then, he's like, what did you just call me? He's like, yo, you remember me? 2004 MTV, you know, like you go all the way back, 15 years. Like, oh, he gonna remember you from the MTV Awards 15 years ago. I just thought it was so funny. And then he's like, I'm about to revoke your honorary black card. But we got
He says, stop there. I said, well, I'm still invited to the cookout, right? He says, stop there or I'm gonna revoke your black card. Get in here, don't say anything else. And we were improvising. He said, here's what it is. You're trying to get into the party. Usher sees you, make it work. And Evan came up totally like Mike, was like, hey, that looks nice. I like that shirt.
Yeah. No,
it was just great. Something we did in 3 hours, you know, right before.
It was good.
You know, the ring. You're so sweet. You broke the whole damn. There were things I forgot
that
about that.
Okay, no, listen.
You're
I
like,
love...
you knew the aperture and the lighting. You were like, wow.
Yeah, I almost gave you a Faye Dunaway. Legend. Anyway, let's move on before we run out of time, Jamie, because I so appreciate you talking about celebrating career. But
I mean,
that's what you do, Jamie. You like create characters. Where did that come from?
I mean, I think it's just like all of us, you know, I think as a child, my mom used to have these dinner parties, you know, and she was like you said, you was bougie. She was trying to be like fake bougie, you know, and she had the nice china and all this bullshit. She worked at a law firm and she had like these English people. She had all different people, but like English people came over and some lady came over and she goes, where's that young boy of yours? That young little thing. And then, like, I came out. My mom used to dress me weird. And then she'd be like, oh, I would have left him at the hospital. And, like, literally, like, would drink gin and do jokes. And then I would just start imitating them.
Wow.
And then, like, when I was in school, I would imitate my teachers. I have no idea where it came from. And then people would laugh. And they would tell me it was good. And then I would listen to it. I'm like, oh, I just kind of sound like that person. And that's kind of how I was born, just mimicking people, really.
Right. Now, did you score these big development deals based on faking it till you make it?
Yeah. Remember back in the day when they would give TV deals like candy?
Hell yeah. You would get a three picture or a three show development deal. It was like, thank you.
Now you got to go and meet on a guest spot for Murder in the First TNT 9th season. I mean, Jesus. I would just go in. Well, and the make and the fake it was, I was working as a telemarketer and I was getting really good at selling, like, you know, stupid stuff like office supplies and stuff like that. And then I was doing comedy at night and I was, you know, doing different characters and stuff in my comedy. And then I started using the characters to sell the stuff on my, I was sell stuff like to sell my office supplies. And then I got good. And then I read a book called Think and Grow Rich.
Yes.
With Napoleon Hill. And it was all of these different things about how to sell and stuff. And so I started looking at myself as a product. And because I would sell all this stuff and I was getting good at it and I didn't care about it. So I was like, I care about me. But back in the day, as you know, there was no social media. We didn't talk about ourselves. People talked about you. Oh, I'm Vivica Fox. She's an amazing actress.
Word.
You know, can do. And now it's like, you got to promote yourself, which is weird, but that's how we are now. It used to be people. You didn't talk about yourself. Other people did.
Exactly. All right. Now,
right?
Yes. Go ahead.
And so that's basically, I created a character and I started selling myself and I'd call agencies. I'd call casting assistants.
Really?
That's how I initially started getting in to meet people, was by lying.
Huh. All right. Okay. but guess what? But you faked it till you make it. I tell you that much.
Yeah. That's a real term. I really believe that. Like,
no doubt.
That.
So tell us, what current projects are you working on, darling?
Well,
After Corona is over, what current projects do you want to work on?
Yeah, well, I had two movies I was going to do and they both went down. So funny. The two weeks. And then the producer just called last week. He's like, yo, man, it's done until 2021 at least.
Word.
I had this movie that was about an older stand-up comedian and a young stand-up comedian. It's called Don't Suck. And it's kind of like a dramedy. And it's about... I don't want to say too much, but it's about a comedian who basically is trying to find, he wants to do anything to make it. And he meets this young comedian with special powers. It's actually a really, sounds like a crazy idea, but it's a really good script. And I was doing a show on NBC called Heartbeat, and then that got canceled. So, I mean, I'm writing a couple things, another comedy, but who knows? But right now I had a movie I did called Crabs in the Bucket with Bruce Dern and Taryn Manning and Kathy Moriarty and Jeremy Piven. And that was shot in New York in the early year. And now that was supposed to go to Tribeca Film Festival. That got canceled. I got a couple of things in the can, but who knows when they're going to come out, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of on hold, unfortunately, you know?
Yeah.
But whenever you get back at it, I know you're going to be good at it. So keep
us close. You know what I miss? What's I miss that? Sitting in seat six with you in seat two, getting that Byron money.
Oh, my gosh. I know. Funny You Should Ask. It's a show we do, you guys. I love doing Funny You Should Ask. People love that show. It's so good. They really do.
I wish we could shoot it right now.
I know. But, you know, Byron will figure it out sooner or later. So we'll be back. So fingers crossed. Tell me before we leave, Jamie Kennedy, what drives you?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think like in terms of creatively, I just want to be like express these things in me. You know what I mean? Like I have these ideas and these different thoughts and stuff. And I think doing something, I really love doing a project, whether it's a film or a TV show or a comedy special. I love putting things together, making them complete, and then putting them out in the world and then feeling like, ooh, I accomplished something. I like to get things done.
Like to get things done. Now, any tips that you would have for aspiring comedians or actors?
I would say just do it. You know, you got all the tools now more than we ever did. I mean, I would say start filming your own stuff. And I read a lot of books, biographies on people like, you know, Joan Rivers and different people who struggled. And just know that the journey is the destination. It's going to take a while, but if you enjoy it, it's fun. You know what I mean?
Word. And see, that's what I try to explain to young actors coming up. We've been doing this for a long time. This didn't happen overnight. You know, it's been a hell of a marathon ride, especially for me and for you as well. There's a reason why we've been able to go into different chapters. You even told before we close out, our producers, that you don't like working for people. You prefer to work for yourself. You and I share that in common. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, listen, we've been very fortunate to work with some amazing people. And I we really are a lot alike because we've touched almost every aspect of entertainment in terms of what we've worked on, from TV shows to reality to drama to A-plus movies to all types of stuff. Word. And we've learned a lot. I've learned a ton. And I just feel that a lot of people overthink this stuff. You know what I mean? And they confuse it and they make it too difficult. So it's like, I want to work for me because I like doing what I do the way I know it's going to get done. And a lot of people don't have my same work ethic. So I love to collaborate, but when people are slacking, it's too hard to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, like people laughed at me and like I produced my own Lifetime movies called So Wrong, It's Right. And we're going on like film 18. And when I first started doing, people were like, oh my God, I can't believe she's doing Lifetime films. Guess what? Now they're asking me, can they be in my films?
Yeah.
Okay. How about that?
Good for you.
So I get it. How sometimes it's okay for you to work for yourself because you know what? We get those films done and I'm very happy because I love making movies. I love doing what I do. You know?
Yeah. I'm with you.
100%. All right. Well, that leads us to today's hustle hack. Today's hustle hack is hashtag fake it till you make it. Jamie Kennedy is a testament to this. Now, you've heard the expression, when in Rome, sometimes you have to act as you are in Rome, okay? But at the same time, you have to do the work and you have to have the receipts. Connections are huge too. So keep your ear to the streets and pound them hard because you never know who has the power to take your career to the next level. And don't forget to stay kind, and be humble, just like my boy, Jamie Kennedy is. Jamie, I want to thank you so much for being on Hustling with Vivica A. Fox. Tell our fans where they can find you at on social media.
Oh, thank you, Vivica. I can find me at Jamie Kennedy on Twitter, the Jamie Kennedy on Instagram, Jamie Kennedy on Facebook, jamiekennedy.com. You know, you can find me all that there on my YouTube page. And I thank you so much. You're so awesome. It's just, that's beautiful at the end. This is like a inspirational thing. I love that.
Yes, I always do my, this is what why I love doing my podcast show, because it is to celebrate careers. I'm not here to tear you down. I'm not here to beat you up about your journey, because your journey is your journey. I'm here to celebrate your journey. And, you know, I love you tons, and you always make it do what it do. So when I heard today I was going to be talking to you, I was thrilled, and we've had a blast today. So darlings, you can find your girl Vivica Fox on Twitter at Miss Vivica Fox, on Instagram at Miss V Fox. And for the podcast, you can find us at Vivica Hustling. Subscribe, download, and listen to Hustling with Vivica A. Fox. Until next time, darlings, bye for now. Mwah.